What's going on, people? It's the Fly Life Podcast. This week, I have Ryan McLean in the studio. Ryan works at Emacs doing sales and some R&D work, and they've supported the podcast for a while. This was a long time coming. Super stoked to have him on the show. He not only works at Emacs, but he's also an avid FPV enthusiast. So we talk about a little bit of his flying, but mostly about Emacs, their products, their new RC car, kind of where they're headed as a brand and how they see the FPV space and all us knucklehead customers. So with that being said, let's roll into the first sponsor for this week's episode, which is Emacs, and can be found at emacs-usa.com. As you learned in this episode, I love Emacs products. I've been using a bunch of them. I now have the new 2208 2500 kV freestyle motors. Been loving my 2550 kV 2207 motors. And yeah, they just have a slew of awesome products. So make sure to use They just have a slew of awesome products, so you can use code FLYLIFE at checkout to get 10% off at emacs-usa.com. And then our second sponsor is Real Steady Go. I don't think it has to be said too much, but Real Steady Go is awesome, and I use it for all my cinematic stuff. I still like it more than HyperSmooth because I can manipulate it in post-production, and I'm not just, you know, sending my stabilization off to the hopes and prayers of a camera algorithm. And you can get $5 off Real Steady Go with code FLYLIFE at realsteady.com, or just go to realsteady.com/FLYLIFE to get that discount. All right, let's roll into this week's episode with Ryan McLean on the Fly Life Podcast.
I've been in FPV for about 3 years. I got started a while ago, just kind of on my own accord. I started off with simulators, though, actually. So I came into the age of learning to fly without breaking everything and spending all sorts of money. So that was definitely a benefit to coming into the hobby a little bit later for me.
Yeah, you lucky dog.
Oh, yeah. I hear the horror stories all the time, especially from some of my coworkers who were into it earlier than I was.
Yeah, I used to break it down like I was spending like $18 a flight for like the first 3 months or something.
Oh my God, yeah. No, I would have been out of this by now if it's gotten me $18 a flight every time I flew.
Yeah, different times. Do you have any questions about the show or anything like that? Anything you do or specifically like don't want to talk about?
No, I mean, pretty much everything's on the table. I mean, if there's any sort of like secret projects that we're working on, I obviously just won't bring it up, but everything else about Emacs, I'm willing to tell you pretty much anything. Nothing's really a secret with us.
Sweet.
But yeah, so my role at Emacs is working in sales and marketing, mostly sales. I work with a lot of our dealers, just providing all of our newest products to them. But a lot of my job is also product development. Because I've been into FPV for so long and I have the flying skills that I do, as well as the other pilots in the office, we all have our hands on every single product that comes out of here. So we test it, we bash it, we break it, figure out what's breaking on it, figure out what if we need more power somewhere, we need better components somewhere. And it's really just finding a balance with all those things and affordability. So, you know, having the FPV experience definitely helps. But having some product development knowledge is definitely big just for testing things. You know, you can get a quad, but nobody really knows how to test a quad for every single consumer. But yeah, I really enjoy being at Emacs, and the product development aspect of it is definitely my favorite part of the job.
Well, it probably
sales and marketing is still great. I love it.
Yeah, and it probably makes you, you know, like makes the other part of the job, like the sales and marketing, not only more enjoyable for you, but probably better at it, having that like link to the passion and the experience with it. Cause then if you like tried and tested something, like, you know, it's so much more easy to be genuine about a product when it's something you're into, on that level.
Because when you have this sort of knowledge and the passion for the hobby, it's really easy to go overboard with technical terms and things like that, that people don't really understand when you're trying to have, like, you know, the elevator conversation of like what you do and what your company does. It's really easy to just get stuck in VTX and 5x2.8 props and all sorts of just like crazy nomenclature that a normal people wouldn't understand. So you kind of have to break it down bit by bit with this hobby.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm sure you probably, you know, like in the world I operate in, like I deal with just a lot of other pilots that have been into this for like years. But in your role, you probably talk to people that have been into it for like 2 weeks to years to 6 months, just like the whole gamut, the whole spectrum, different types of flying.
Absolutely, especially with the kits that we're coming out with recently. We're talking to a lot of pilots that have been flying for a single minute of their life. They're looking to first get into FPV, and that's kind of where we're starting to come in with our BNF and RTF products these days, is we're trying to get as many people into the FPV hobby as possible and just providing the FPV experience at the absolute ground level, no pun intended, so just anybody can get into it. So our Interceptor is our FPV car. That's kind of just introduced to allow people to get into FPV. Anybody can drive an RC car. You don't really have to worry about an RC car falling out of the air. And it gives you that experience of being in the goggles and disassociating yourself from the vehicle that you're piloting or driving. So that's kind of our first step, is allowing people to experience FPV with the car. And then if they choose that they really love that experience, they can go from there. We have our new Easy Pilot, which we can probably talk about more later, all the way up to our Hawk Pro series. And we're trying to create a progression ladder, so anybody that sees FPV on YouTube or FPV anywhere, they can go to Emacs and go start to finish from a beginner to pro macro 5-inch pilot.
Pro pilot, man, just throwing the words around. No, I'm just kidding.
All the pro pilots.
Going back
to that, joins FPV pro pilot.
Yeah, which is completely based off Instagram followers for everybody listening. No.
Absolutely.
Going back to the car thing, though, like I think this is such a good product and something that I didn't really think of like a relation until you just mentioned it right now. But an issue I've seen with putting goggles on someone's face that's never done it, even if they've flown RC like their whole lives, is being okay with that disassociation, like letting go and just like flying from the craft and like understanding the world you're in. And so do you guys see the RC car product as like a way to dip your feet into that world, low risk, like kind of just get a sense for what the world looks like through goggles?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly it. You know, especially with drones, is you give these people the goggles and they have the drone in front of them. You say, okay, put on the goggles, fly the drone. Okay, first of all, they don't know how to fly the drone. Second of all, they've never experienced flying anything or driving anything with a screen in front of their eyeballs unless it's a video game. So having the screen that close, sort of like a virtual reality experience, is totally abnormal for most people. So if you come to the FPV car and you give it a shot and you realize that this is something that I enjoy, you can go further into it. Or, you know, if you buy the car and you try the goggles, you say, oh, I can't do this, it makes me sick. Well, at least you had that experience and you're not trying to fly a drone. It's easier to just kind of drive a car around on the ground and be able to experience what FPV is like, rather than attempting to fly a drone and also trying to disassociate yourself from the craft at the same exact time.
Yeah, and I think we all forget it as drone pilots, but like, drones are so fast, even like a tiny whoop in a house, you know, like it just covers so much ground and it's just like so much reaction time to take in while you're trying to learn. Whereas a car, you can just let go and it'll just stop.
You know? Yeah. And even if you just let go and you crash into something, it's not a catastrophe. You're not landing in anybody's hair. Yeah. Or you're not killing any animals, you know.
Clipping a dog. Yeah.
Yeah. So on that same token, actually, about extremely slow quads, our Easy Pilot is actually extremely, extremely slow for that reason. So I'm not sure if you've heard about our Easy Pilot yet, but our Easy Pilot is basically the beginner's beginner racing drone. It has a barometric sensor in it, so it has altitude control, plus one stick flying, so it has both yaw and roll mixed together.
What?
So in that first mode, you have the altitude control and you have the one stick flying. So you take the drone off and it sticks in the air at a desired height that the pilot likes. You can increase or lower it using the stick. And then all you do is simply pitch forward on the right stick and give it roll input at the same time. It'll kind of like drive like an RC car in the air. But it's extremely, extremely slow for that reason. because Tiny Whoops.
And like on a percentage scale, how much slower would you say than like your top of the line RTF? Roughly.
Like the Tiny Hawk? Probably 25 the speed of a full tilt Tiny Hawk.
Okay.
Like it's very, very, very slow, just to allow the flying experience. So that's the mode one, has your one stick flying, and then there's a second mode that has the altitude control hold again. But this time it has independent roll and yaw. So the pilot can start to learn both the control inputs while not having to learn the throttle management just yet. So it provides a step into that two-stick flying that's incredibly difficult, but also you don't have to worry about throttle management, which is the equally most difficult part of flying an FPV drone.
Yeah.
So then you have your third mode after all that, which is full throttle management. It's basically just an angle mode, Tiny Whoop, with both your two inputs. So you kind of go through those three modes. It's extremely slow. The quad is slow. It has very low angle limits, so you can't get going too fast. But it allows people to learn FPV, and from that they have the absolute basics to go onto the Tiny Hawk or to go onto a Baby Hawk, something like that.
Man, that just makes so much sense. I can't believe that hasn't been a thing since before. Like a you see it in any other form of racing. Like you don't get the fastest one till you're at the top. An FPV, like you could just buy the fastest rig and blow it up 30 seconds later, no problem.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you have no idea what you're doing, you can make $300 go away very quickly.
Yeah, man, that is. And so, like, did you guys see? I'm going to guess the answer is yes, but like it seems like FPV over the last few years, like there was this initial era where everybody got into it, was like super vested because you had to do all this soldering and all this stuff to be into it. Then it became a bit more like the barrier to entry got lowered, but it didn't seem like the people really caught onto it because it was still a little bit too difficult. Like you still had to solder and set up. So did Emacs just see like this void of like there's all these people out there that could try FPV or get into it, but the barrier to entry is just too big as it stands?
I mean, that the goal with any sort of BNF company is to have a drone that somebody can just buy and be ready to fly without any sort of soldering. But we're kind of trying to go a step further than that, and we're just trying to provide just the steps for learning how to FPV and to get into the hobby itself. So you can buy a bind and fly, any sort of kit that's available right now, but even like a regular Tiny Hawk RTF kit that we had come out with before, it's still basically an angle mode whoop, which if you try and get anybody off the street to fly an angle mode whoop, 99.9% of people would not be able to fly that quite at all.
Yeah.
So having the R2 modes, the one stick and the altitude control takes away all of the skill that's really necessary for flying the drone to begin with, and then you learn it over time. So then by the time that you're ready to upgrade to something a little faster, you have those muscle memories already in your fingers.
You guys got to do like a spec race and have like the last heat of the MultiGP Nationals next year, do a race with those with the lowest mode just to see what happens.
Oh my God. I mean, it's actually pretty fun. Because you can set the altitude at what you want, and then just kind of like take your hand off the stick. You just fly it with one hand. You just push forward and give it some roll, and it just flies around on its own.
Yeah, just make all the gates the same height or something.
it's really awesome. Great. It's one of the only ways that I can line a sight a quad. So.
Yeah, that's true. I have to turn so slow to be able to turn in rate mode line of sight. Like I can whip a DJI around line of sight, but a racer is so hard.
Oh yeah, I don't know how those guys do it, like RC Addict and Quad Mover and all those crazy line of sight guys.
Yeah, or like Minchan flying over those people.
I really wish I was there.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Sorry, was that?
I said Minchan flying over those people in that auditorium.
Oh,
he's just flying over a crowd doing some line of sight tricks. I was like, not for me, kid.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not for me even in that situation even with a Minchan Kim, but good for him.
So in this whole like Emacs focusing on ready to flies and bind and flies and stuff like that, do you guys see like a differentiation between different styles of FPV, like racing, freestyle, cinematic? Like, do you see that in your customer base, or is it overall just FPV?
I think there's definitely a very distinct racing and freestyle audiences. Like, we've had our 5-inch Bind and Flies that have come out recently are our Buzz Freestyle and our Hawk Pro / Sport, both those products. And it seems like the Bind and Fly market, most of the guys go towards the racers. And the freestyle guys, they seem to want to piece together their own rigs. I think a lot of the eco motors that we sell are to freestyle guys who just want some cheap motors that they can back. The racers are buying the Bind and Fly versions now, where people that are starting to get into racing are buying our Hawk Bind and Fly models, and they're not actually building their own race quads, which I think is a little bit different than to be. I think for a while, like the market was freestylers were buying the BNFs, like the Wizard X220, yeah. And the racers were building their quads because the parts were so specific that the racers wanted. And now that parts are kind of getting to a point where they're not necessarily plateaued, but everybody's kind of on the same sort of level, and everybody's like, the CSC is sort of the same as this CSC, this flight controller is kind of the same as this flight controller. The racing guys just want something that they can buy and be ready to race, already tuned. And it seems like that's the way the market's going.
Yeah, that makes sense. Like, I've never been into racing, but when I saw those pictures of, like, the racers rolling up to a race with, like, 10 quads that were identical, like, that to me seems like the perfect place to just have them come that way, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it really depends on if the Bind and Fly is for you. Like, we've seen some people that they really love our Hawk Bind and Fly, but they prefer a camera, a specific camera. So they'll buy our Hawk Bind and Fly, and then they'll just change out all the cameras on all of them. So you still have that great flying platform, that great racing platform with your preferred visuals. So if it doesn't come from the factory exactly how you want, you can change out something very easily. It doesn't require any soldering or anything.
Yeah, and it probably creates like this kind of like aftermarket mod kind of vibe to quads. Like in RC cars, not a lot of people build them from scratch, but you buy your RC car and then you can get like aluminum parts or different shocks and like build it out a bit more. Like maybe quads are headed in that direction too, where you get your ready to fly platform, but you're like, oh, I really want to upgrade to these motors or like that camera.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think everybody's always looking for a way to make something their own. So any way that they can do that, if you can buy a Hawk Bind and Fly and put something in it that you like a little bit more, all the power to you. I think that's perfect for everybody, as long as your platform is your platform.
Yeah. And then for you guys as a company, like when you're, you know, coming up with a Bind and Fly kit and, you know, you're trying to please like a certain demographic, how do you go about like testing it, just like whittling it down to being like, we're going to go with this KV, this amp ESC, you know, like how do you go through that whole process?
So I guess if you're talking about like beginner products, it's really just maximizing efficiency with the power. So you want a good amount of power, but you don't want too much, but you also want good flight time. And that's pretty much, that echoes kind of all of our products. We don't look to be the absolute fastest product on the world, but we also just want to be the most refined, have the best tune, and the most efficient performing setups. So we kind of just go through, we have our process where, okay, we're creating a product, we have a prop or a set of props, and we have a couple motors. We'll try all those, we'll try the prop and motor combinations. If none of those work, we'll go try a different prop, maybe a different size motor, until we can find something that provides optimal flight time with good performance. Really sense. Trying to optimize flight time, because we've found that flight time is very important to our market these days.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure the like that demographic of the market, the beginner is probably like way easier to please in a sense. Like I feel like as you get more into it, everybody gets their own like opinions and they're like, oh, I really like this one KV or like the way this kind of frame feels. Or but the beginners are like, yeah, keep me in the air as long as I can and make it durable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, as even if with especially on that notion with you, you get people that are coming into the hobby and you say, OK, so how long does this drone fly for? And you say, oh, it only flies for 5 minutes. And they're kind of taken aback. 5 minutes? only 5 minutes? How was it only fly for 5 minutes? Okay, and then you explain to them, oh, you buy multiple batteries, you land it, you go back up again. But still, the notion is there that people like to continue flying. If you can fly for more than 5 minutes, then great. Some people are just too mentally exhausted and they have to land it, but some people just want to continue flying. So the closer that we can get to a longer flight time, the better, really.
Nice. And then what about like the top tier, like 5-inch racers and stuff like that? Similar process, or
The 5-inch racers, we're really going for a good tune on those. We have motors and props that will give you about a 3 to 4 minute flight time, depending on how you're flying for those racers and freestyle quads. But that it's really about the tune. We just want to make sure that it's tune and flying perfectly out of the box. That's kind of our number one for anything 5-inch related and any sort of product, really. But getting the 5-inch correct and just making sure that tune is on point is kind of our main goal with that.
And do you tackle that part of it, with like changing PIDs or hardware? Does one come before the other?
So if we have new hardware that we're testing, we'll test the hardware first on some known builds. Just like some known clean flying builds. So then we can kind of determine if there's noise coming from the newer hardware. And if there's no noise coming from the newer hardware, we'll throw it on the clean build and start tuning off of that, filters and PIDs off of that.
Oh, that makes sense. And then out of curiosity, do you guys have like a team of people that tune these things, or do you just have like one Mr. Miyagi in the back where you're like, we need this one by Tuesday?
So we got a couple of guys here. Two main guys for the most part, and then two other people to help us confirm that they're a good tune. So we got about four people on board just in our U.S. office that are in product development and tuning. And then once we've kind of confirmed it over here, we'll send it to some of our manufacturing team overseas just so they can confirm on their end that it's flying okay over there.
That's
right. There's always manufacturing differences that can happen. So if we're testing a frame over here, and then they get one off the production line and it has some noise issues, they can tackle it over there before we go full production and have issues later.
Yeah, I'm sure there's probably so many like little intricacies like that and issues that like we as consumers don't even realize. Like as consumers, we have these issues of like, oh, I forgot to tighten my FPV lens, and like that's why I was having so-and-so issues with my video. But I'm sure there's so many things that like issues you guys have as a manufacturer between two offices, factories, all this testing, and like the rate of which all this stuff, not so much anymore, but how it changes.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's everything is coming out so quickly, especially with our product development phase. We've had a lot of stuff that was in development, and now that we're finally getting to production, we're putting it all through production and doing testing at the same time for a lot of new products that are coming out. And it's really hard to stay on top of those, but we're doing our as best as we can to stay on top of absolutely everything over here. There's a little bit of details and stuff that slip through, but we absolutely make every chance that we can to correct those. And we provide the support and warranty services always, always, always after sales. So we're trying to differentiate ourselves from all of the FPV companies by providing the most after sales support and warranty service for a B&F company as possible. And just provide a good experience to our FPV customers, because
I think that after purchase support, especially for a new user, is almost worth its weight in gold. Because like that first time that you have a motor that went dead, or like it's twitching, or something's weird and you don't understand it, like having a lifeline versus just the best blog post you can find, is worth its weight in gold, man.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we're really just trying to provide that experience to everybody. You know, you buy all these products every single day, and if you have a problem with that product, it's usually pretty easy to get in contact with a manufacturer and get it sorted out. We're finding with a lot of FPV companies, and sometimes even with us in the past, when customers have tried to get in contact with us in the past, we've had issues, and we're just trying to move forward and provide the best customer support possible. And even if that means losing a little bit of money and providing I don't know where I was going with that.
But, killer service. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it goes a long way. So if you put money into the customer support, it pays off in the end. I think that's where I was.
Yeah, playing that long game.
Exactly.
How long have you been with Emacs?
So I've been with Emacs for about 8 months now.
8 months, okay.
Yeah, so not too long, but I've been a huge Emacs fan. I used their motors well before I even came to the company.
Yeah, they are some great motors. Like, I mean, I haven't mentioned it yet, but like I've been running Emacs motors for like 2 years, and I stuck with the LS lineup until I couldn't buy them anymore, basically. Like, till I couldn't find them at my usual spots. But for me, like, I've just never had, like, a motor come that was off. Like, with other brands, sometimes I'd order, you know, like, 16 motors at once, and one would just be, like, a little weird. And then, dude, they could just take a beating. Like, they weren't very finicky. Like, they could be dirty, you know. I could slam up against concrete, replace a prop nut, and they just, like, never failed me.
Well, that's really awesome to hear, man. Our LS series was definitely one of our best performing motor series that we came out with, especially on our Hawk 5 with the LS2206. We got a lot of great feedback from those motors and kind of used that towards all of our new motors. And those LS motors, we took everything that we learned from those motors and pretty much put it into the Eco motor and our Freestyle motor. So what we learned there is just design and materials and making sure that the magnets are good quality, but they don't have to be the absolute most amazing quality like on some of your high-end $25 motors, something like that. But as long as it keeps you in the air, motors are a good thing, and we're really just trying to make everything affordable. It's like,
because yeah. It's like we talked about before the show. Like, it's just, yeah. You don't want to be, you know, having $80 crashes.
Yeah, even the LS motors were $17 a piece or $18 a piece, if I remember correctly. Yep. That's still pretty expensive for a motor. I mean, so Eco Motors is kind of where we took all that knowledge from our LS series
and put it through. And what I was going to ask before too is, like, so you've only been there for 8 months, but maybe you know like a longer timeline. But how, like, from a brand's perspective, how do they perceive all these changes in FPV? Like, it was very hype trainy for a bit. It's a bit more grounded now, but we have different cell count batteries. So there's like all these different KVs to cater to. Like, the amount of changes and fluctuations is just crazy. And I think it's calming down, but how do you guys as a brand see that whole thing? How do you keep up with it?
So we saw it and we kind of just took the approach of refining the product. We weren't trying to follow the hype and provide, you know, F7 dual gyro flight controllers with a zillion amp ESCs. We're just trying to provide a product that works. And that's, at the end of the day, that's really what it's about. So you can follow the hype as much as you can. Yes, hype sells products, but will hype continue to build your brand? We're not really sure. So the Tiny Hawk was really where we kind of realized that, yes, a product can be hyped, but it can also be successful at the same time. So other than that, I think hype is kind of detrimental to the hobby just because of kind of the way it makes manufacturers produce products so quickly and with a little bit less quality control. So we're kind of on the lines where quality over hype, and pretty much it.
Yeah, which makes so much sense, like, longevity-wise. Can you imagine auto manufacturers being like, this is the February edition of the Honda Civic. Can't wait till April for the next one, like, for a completely different engine and new drivetrain.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't make the consumer happy either. It's like they buy a product and then, you know, 2 months later, a better version comes out. It's like, oh, crap, well, I fell for the hype and I bought this product not realizing that maybe it's not what I exactly wanted.
Yeah, it'd be cool if like someday it got whittled down to the point where we had like yearly launches. You're like, oh, okay, sweet, May's coming up. That's the Emacs launch for this year. You know, like iPhone status keynotes.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah. I mean, FPV is kind of in a weird spot right now for sure. Like, there's, besides like, I guess, digital HD FPV right now, like, there's not really too much innovation going on. Like, we're kind of stuck with F4/F7 flight controllers and 32-bit BL Heli ESCs as our kind of top of the line before you get into like the open source, or excuse me, the closed source sort of stuff. But it's going to be interesting, I guess, to see where the 5-inch market really goes. Because as Emacs, we're kind of focusing on the bind and fly RTF and getting people into the FPV experience. So we'll continue to support our Hawk products. But I guess we're curious as where the 5-inch market is going to go as well, as I assume you are with some of these questions. Is, I guess we're just going to have to see.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is like no one knows. I think not listening to hype and like sticking to good products and like easy to use and stuff like that's the way to do it. Because wherever it goes, like those values aren't going to go away, you know? But in terms of like guessing where it's going, like even from a piloting perspective, I can't imagine having like, you know, the dollars on the line and manufacturing and stuff like that. But from a piloting perspective, it's even just like how, I guess the biggest thing is how the not FPV world perceives it is like where I think the biggest turmoil is, you know?
Oh yeah, exactly. And I guess, so getting people the ability to have that experience is kind of going to also push the learning and flying around the office, you have to say, plug it in. Just so if somebody's rendering a video or uploading a video or uploading a file, sending an email, something like that, somebody's going to lose internet.
Dude, that's like next level of the plugging in issue, like drops the office internet versus just drops someone out of the air.
Yeah, exactly. We're like, we really need to rethink the default channel of all these tiny hawks.
Yeah. How big is your guys' office? Like how many people you guys have hanging out every day?
We got about 10 people in the Emacs USA office. Not too many people, but we have more overseas. This is mainly just our design, testing, product development, and US sales.
Oh, that's rad. And like, yeah. How did the FPV car idea happen? Because like, I imagine you guys just sitting in a meeting and one of these things rolling in with like a tiny whoop duct tape to the top, and you're like, I have an idea.
So, so the guys actually, Brandon Cruz, our main designer, actually had the idea a couple of years ago and brought it up to everybody and on our company owner. And I guess at the time it wasn't the correct product. But I mean, I came into the company and I was like, FPV car. We need FPV car. Everybody needs an FPV car. So we pushed that along as fast as possible. We had a little concept vehicle probably about the fifth month I was here. And then from there, it was just everybody was loving it. Everybody in the office was driving them around. And we knew this product was just going to be a crazy hit.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. And it's funny because like a lot of people I know, like, I mean, I think Gapit brought it to fame first, just strapping an FPV cam on a car. But like, it's weird that no one's really hopped on the train up until you guys.
That is than like an RC car market. So if you came, an RC car company came out with an FPV car, people might not be so so aggressive to get on it and check out the FPV footage on it when they kind of know that Emacs is known for FPV products and coming out with quality FPV products. So it's kind of a no-brainer purchase for a lot of people that are already in the industry. But the price allows it to be a no-brainer for people that are not in the industry yet. The kit for the car is $95.99 for the car, the controller, and the goggles, which I don't think it's even possible for us to go any lower. And that's really just so we can get everybody possible into this hobby and experience it.
No, I mean, that's a great price. That's like 3 high-end batteries.
You know, it's like you can buy 3 6S batteries or you can buy this full FPV car kit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good deal. Yeah, man, Emacs is, I mean, I think it's like a flagship brand of FPV, and it's going to be here for a minute. Do you guys have any, like, products or, like, you know, I know you've been mentioning this, like, bind and fly, ready to fly section, but anything that's on the cooker ready to come out or you're thinking about?
So, which part? The Easy Pilot?
Any of it, like, just, like, any Emacs products or, like, a direction that is anything coming out that we need to know about or you can talk about?
Okay, I mean, stuff that's coming, not really anything coming up in the short term. We're really just kind of pushing our Interceptor and Easy Pilot for now before the holiday season. And then early sometime next year, we should have some new stuff coming out that'll excite more people in the FPV industry and not just beginners.
Before or after the Chinese New Year?
Hmm.
That's always like the deciding factor.
That magical time of year.
Yeah.
No comment.
And then what about you, like Emacs, just like you, Ryan, as a person, like what kind of flying are you into? Like what kind of videos do you like to watch? Like what's your gist of FPV?
Oh, so I mean, I bet you can tell from the way that I reached out to you, but I really enjoy just some nice freestyle videos, and I enjoy freestyle flying myself. But I guess most of the flying experience that I've had as of lately has been racing. Like I've just been doing whoop races and 5-inch racing, and it just keeps me sharp. The freestyle is great for when you just kind of want to relax, but racing really keeps you sharp and makes you more confident when you hit those gaps while you're freestyling.
That makes sense.
Absolutely.
Well, sweet, man. I really appreciate you doing the show. I know we had some minor internet hiccups, but I don't think it'll be an issue. But this was a long time coming because, you know, we talk and I rock Emacs stuff. You guys sponsor the show, which I couldn't be more thankful for. But I really appreciate you taking the time to do this, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me on. It's nice to be able to talk about some of our new stuff coming out. And I really appreciate your support of VMAX products and just us in general over the past two plus years and hopefully more to come.
Heck yeah.
All right, man.